card games under whatever shade they can find, friends blasting their stereos, shooting shit on the stoops. And while my apartment is small, it's moments like these that make those walls feel bigger than they are. I point to the Red Hospital across the street. My mother works over there and manages to be 20 minutes late every morning. Down the block is the post office, and my father used to be a security guard there. Maybe all that time alone with his thoughts was where he went wrong. The fire hydrant on the corner has been wrenched open. The screaming kids remind me of all the times we filled up buckets and spilled water all over the playground, throwing ourselves down the wet slides since we couldn't afford to go to an actual water park. "I don't know what my dad does," Thomas replies. "The last time I saw him was on my 9th birthday. I was watching him from my window go to his car to get my Buzz Lightyear, but instead, he got in and drove away." I don't know when we stopped walking or who stopped first, but we're both still. "Asshole. Let's not go taking dark turns, okay?" Thomas eyes the sprinkler and mischievously raises his huge eyebrows before pulling off his shirt, his arms flexing. He's got some God of War-like abs coming in, and all I have is serious rib cage. "Come on. I don't want my phone to get wet. Just fold it inside your shirt. No one's going to steal it. You do know we aren't in Queens, right?" Thomas tucks his phone inside his shirt and leaves it against a mailbox. "You're lost, dude." He runs with an athlete's sprint and bounces back and forth through the sprinklers, the sun glinting off his belt buckle. Sure, some people are looking at him like he's insane, but he doesn't seem to care. I don't know what possesses me, what chokes out all my insecurities and allows me to pull my shirt off, but it's freeing. Thomas gives me 2 thumbs up. I don't feel like a scrawny kid right now. I pull my phone out, but before I can roll it inside my shirt, it buzzes. Genevieve is calling. I freeze. "Hey!" I answer. "Hi. I somehow miss your dumb idiot face already. Fly out here so we can build a house in the woods and start a family," she says. "I miss you more, but not as much as I hate camping." "It wouldn't count as camping if we spent our lives here."
"Truth."
I picture her smiling despite the distance, and it makes me happy. No, happier. I want to beg her to come home, but I want her to stay focused on her art and not worry about me. "Have you started painting yet, or is there some lame orientation?" "The lame orientation was yesterday. We're taking a quick break before doing some still life on trees, and..." I nearly drop my phone when I see Thomas doing push-ups from inside the sprinklers, showing off for these girls across the street. I put the phone back to my ear when I hear Genevieve calling my name. "Sorry, Thomas is making a dick of himself. He doesn't care like I would have."
"You boys playing more suicide?"
"Nah, it's just me and Thomas." I feel too exposed with my shirt off. I think I'm heading home in a little bit, though. Pretty tired. "You think you'll be free to call me tonight? I want to hear all about the 500 paintings you'll finish today without me around to bother you."
"Yep. Call you tonight, babe."
She hangs up before I can say bye or tell her I love her. Now I feel like shit for getting distracted, but she'll call later. I'll explain how I really needed something fun to do, which is sort of her fault since she left me here, but if she hadn't left, it would have been my fault, so I guess I can't really go blaming her. Hopefully she'll send me a punch across the country and all will be okay. I tuck my phone inside my shirt and kick my sneakers off, leaving everything on the ground. I charge toward the sprinklers in jeans and socks and jump through the jets of water. I'm laughing when I land on the other side.
"Woohoo!"
Thomas whistles.
"About time!"
I shiver from the cold.
"Okay, I miss my clothes." "Be free for 60 seconds, stretch."
Thomas grabs onto my shoulders like he's prepping me for the last game of the season. What game that is, I don't know.
"Forget about everything. Forget about your father, even forget about your girlfriend. Pretend like you're the only one around."
He lets go after coaching me and sits down on the ground. The water continues to wash over him, I sit down across from him and get soaked.
I'm the only one,
I quietly tell myself, shedding my worries as if they could sink down the sewage drains. I squeeze my eyes shut and count up, feeling lighter as each second passes, more myself.
58? 59? I don't want to let go of the last second. 60.
I open my eyes to a group of kids playing tag around us. It's going to be impossible to get out of these jeans, I say. I can barely hear myself with the water crashing into my ears, and the splashing, and the children. Thomas stands and offers to help me up. I clasp his forearm. He shouts, "No homo!" We're both laughing as we go back to our abandoned belongings. Thomas dries his chest off with his shirt, soaking it up.
I don't know if it's because of that nap, but I feel great. I haven't had that much fun since...
Nothing comes to mind.
Good to hear. I mean, sucks for you, but glad to know I'm not wasting your time.
I start putting my shirt on, but poke my head through the wrong hole and get lost. I wrestle with myself until I feel Thomas's hand steadying me.
Stop! Stop!
Thomas is cracking up. There aren't enough no-homos to excuse us from the fact that he's dressing me right now. After some wrangling around, I'm sorted, and find myself facing him.
I can't take you anywhere. You're making an ass of yourself.
I look across the street. The girls who were checking out Thomas are laughing at me.
I would have probably been really pissed if I didn't have Genevieve.
Then I see Brendan and Me Crazy chilling not too far off, smoking the cigarettes Me Crazy steals from his father. They're looking at me like they don't even recognize me. I nod my head to say hey, but they must be too high from smoking some of Brendan's weed earlier.
You doing anything tonight? Thomas asks.
Besides sleeping, which you can do at my house. He smiles. Okay, that sounded wrong. No homo.
What do you have in mind?
Since I feel like the final chase may or may not have slightly disappointed you, it 100% did, I interrupt, I thought we could watch Jaws on my rooftop.
I'm down.
I've always felt the worst time to be treated like a kid is during the summer. Sure, most of the parents around here give us 10 p.m. curfews, but we normally stay out until midnight, sometimes even 1 or 2 a.m., This is not about rebelling, or seeing how far we can push the adults before they come outside with a belt. Fat Dave has a bad like that. It's just that we're exposed to more grown-up shit, versus those in the safer boroughs and white picket fence neighborhoods. But when I call my mom to tell her I'm going to go stay over at Thomas's, she talks to me as if I'm 5 years old. She needs to meet Thomas to make sure he's not a drug dealer or some devil on my shoulder who might talk me off a roof. We go wait for her by one of the brown picnic tables in the second court. This is the same spot where Brendan broke the news to me that he was going to spend the summer in North Carolina with his family when we were 13. I started drawing comics when he wasn't around, and he came home to find himself drawn as a Pokemon trainer. Mom comes downstairs in my eighth-grade gym shirt, and I wish she had left her keys at home so Thomas wouldn't see all her supermarket discount cards.
Hello?
Hi, I'm Thomas, he says, offering a hand.
Elsie, she says with a smile, shaking it. Please tell me that's not sweat on you two.
Sprinklers, I say.
Thank God.
What are your plans tonight, boys?
The movie we just saw bombed, so I thought I could show Stretch here Jaws, Thomas says.
Mom looks at me.
You didn't call and tell me you were going to the movies.
I got back in one piece. Her eyes fall on my scar and then back at me.
He knows, I say.
Thomas cuts in.
If it helps, Miss Elsie, I can give you my address, my phone number, and my mother's phone number. But I feel like Aaron hasn't lived until he's seen Jaws. You're more than welcome to join us if you haven't seen it yourself.
This gets my mom smiling again.
I saw it in the theaters when I was a young girl.
Thank you. Thomas almost looks jealous that she was alive when the movie came out.
Maybe he thinks back then was a better time to be born. I personally think much later would have been a better time instead of right now. I'll be at the supermarket late tonight anyway, so you can go, Mom tells me. I'm smiling like a dumb idiot. I haven't gotten this excited about a sleepover since Fat Dave's mother took us all to buy the newest Throne Wars game at midnight, and everyone stayed up all night playing at his house. Thomas, please make sure he's asleep before 2. Remind him to use the bathroom first, and don't let him spend more than $1 on candy. I would make a you-know-what joke for how embarrassing she's being, but it would prolong the agony. Mom hugs him, and then me. She thanks him for letting me sleep over, takes down all of his information, address, his number, his mother's number, and we start walking away. Your mother's cool, he says. Yeah, when she's not treating me like a little kid. I should probably go grab some clothes to sleep in. Don't worry about it. I have stuff. We're only going a couple blocks down, but as someone who will likely never have enough money to go see the pyramids in Egypt or boat down a canal in Venice, this day away from home already feels like I'm headed to another country. The orange cord follows us to the rooftop and snakes across the pebbled ground, where all evidence of my night with Genevieve is gone. Thomas props the projector up, but it's still light out, so we can't watch the movie yet. I lie down with my arms spread out, like I'm going to try and make a snow angel. What are you doing? Thomas asks. Drying off? I shut my eyes, but can still see spears of orange and feel the sun cooking my face. I can't tell how much of my drenched shirt is water and how much is sweat. Summer sucks that way, but winter can go die twice because I always refuse to leave the house, even whenever Genevieve wants to go out and build snowmen and take silly couple photos. No homo, but you should take your shirt off, Thomas says. I look up, and his shirt is already off, and he's draping it over the ledge to dry. I sit up, take my shirt off too, throw it at him, and sprawl out. The baked pebbles burn, but it's not any worse than the sand at Jones Beach. Speaking of which, 2 shirtless guys on a rooftop isn't all that different from 2 shirtless guys at the beach, so we really shouldn't have to no homo this. Thomas plops down next to me. I used to watch movies with Sarah up here. Well, we would start watching something and then start messing around. You had sex with your ex up here? He laughs. Nah, never sex, just other stuff. Was she your first? I ask. Yeah. You? Yeah, Sarah was my first too, I say. Thomas smacks my shoulder so hard it leaves his handprint. I punch him above his heart, but his chest is firmer than mine. Your breasts are hard. They're called pecs, and I paid a lot of money for them. For some reason I feel uncomfortable talking about his body, probably because it's better than mine. Do you miss Sarah? Be real. No, and yes, he answers. I had to break things off with her, because we really weren't right for each other anymore. I just miss having someone to call and go out and have fun with. But it never had to be Sarah. I get that. We drop it and talk about random things, as the sun falls out of sight behind the city's buildings. Video games, and favorite comics, how much we hate school, and the hot teachers and girls who make it easier, his birthday coming up, on the same day Genevieve gets back, and how he's never smoked before, not even a cigarette. He looks disappointed when I admit to blazing up with Brendan and the others a few times. To keep it light, I admit something incredibly shameful. I don't know how to ride a bike. How is that even possible? He asks. No one ever taught me. My mom doesn't know how to either, and my dad was going to, but never got around to it. I'll have to teach you then. It's a basic life skill, like swimming and masturbating. The sky is dark now. The quality of Jaws is really poor since A, the movie is old, and B, we're watching it on a brick wall. But I wouldn't trade in this experience for a perfectly clear DVD on a big screen TV. It's getting chilly, but I can't pull myself away to get my shirt, because I'm too concerned about the girl running into the ocean like she doesn't know she's in a shark movie.
How many times have you seen this?
Lost count, he says. More than War Horse, less than Jurassic Park. After some serious, oh shit, moments where the shark eats more people and the survivor's boat blows the hell up, we put our shirts back on, pack up the projector, and carefully go down the fire escape, even though the roof door is open.
Ma should be sleeping by now, so we need to be quiet, Thomas says, opening the window and climbing through.
His room smells like clean laundry and pencil shavings. The walls are green and decorated with posters of movies and pictures of his favorite directors. I step over the balled-up socks on the floor and see the toy basketball hoop fixed to the door, where he must play when he's bored. Drawn all over the door are deadlocked games of tic-tac-toe, quotes from Steven Spielberg movies, doodles of dinosaurs, a spot-on drawing of E.T., and lots of randomness I can't make out. His bed isn't made, but it looks comfortable, unlike mine. My bed is basically one level better than a cot. He even has his own desk, whereas the only surface I can sketch on is a textbook on my lap. There's an open notebook on the desk, where it looks like he crossed out some music notes he was composing in favor of a screenplay he hasn't gotten very far with. Thomas opens his closet door, something else I don't have, and starts throwing some shirts on his bed.
Come find something to sleep in, Stretch.
I check out the shirts. Most are too baggy, too tight, too childish, too geriatric, and, I shit you not, too extraterrestrial. It turns out the last shirt was a gift from his aunt's visit to Roswell, New Mexico. I settle on a white T-shirt and quickly change into it. In the corner of the room behind his laundry basket is a board with a pie chart and several notes thumbtacked to it. It reads, Life Chart.
What's this? Old school project?
That's what I've been working on the past couple of days, Thomas says, changing into his Snoopy pajamas and a tank top. I decided I would direct myself on the course of life I want to take. You know, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, except not something that will make me so obsessed to figure out every last detail. I have no idea who this Maslow guy is, but Thomas's chart seems plenty obsessive. Thomas carries the board across the room and props it against his dresser. We sit down in front of it. The categories in this pie chart are divided by school slash work, health, self-actualization, and relationships.
I think I'm doing okay with health. I eat right and work out. I'm struggling a bit with financial security because I can't seem to find a job I love. The money in my savings account can't even buy me a movie ticket.
At least he has a savings account, something that might suggest he once had enough money worth putting away. If I get birthday or Christmas money, I usually slip almost all of it inside Mom's purse, since she knows where we need it most. It sucks paying for a home you don't love living in, but it beats the alternative. See? Silver linings.
I'm finding my biggest struggles are with love and purpose, Thomas continues.
This chart is the work of a madman who wants his happy ending. I should imitate his insanity.
It might have been a blow to my self-esteem after breaking up with Sarah, but chilling with you kept me from falling into a black hole about it, I think.
You're welcome, I say. My phone vibrates inside my pocket, and I see it's Genevieve. I screen it. I'll hit her up before bed.
I'm serious. You gave me something, whatever it is. I can't get it from my missing father, overworked mother, or ex-girlfriend. So maybe you have to help me figure out my true potential.
I study his room for a moment. This place belongs to someone who lives as many lives as possible. There are unfinished sheets of music, movie scripts. Later I learn that there's even an abandoned musical in his closet about a robot that time travels back to the Mesozoic era to study dinosaurs while singing about surviving without technology. There are boxes of Legos stacked in the corner, a colorful tower from when he wanted to be an architect and set designer. It's like when you're a kid and you want to be an astronaut before accepting it might be impossible, even though everyone says nothing's impossible, and they go so far to pinpoint moments from history to make you feel stupid. but you move on anyway. You know your capabilities and circumstances, so you start thinking that maybe being a boxer would be cool, even though you're too skinny. No problem, you can bulk up. But that all changes when you want to write for the newspaper and dream of having your own column, so you start doing that. And one day, when you're writing someone advice on how to be more organized, you think about piloting a ship into space again. This is how Thomas lives his life, one misfire dream after the other. The journey may stretch for a lifetime, but even if he doesn't discover that spark until he's an old man, Thomas will die with wrinkles he earned and a smile on his face. If you help me stay happy so I don't end up like my dad, you got a deal, I say.
Deal.
Chapter 9. Beyond Dead Ends. The only thing that sucked about last night was that I never got a chance to call Genevieve back. It's the first thing I think of when I wake up. Thomas's desk chair creaks, the one where he sat last night to show off his mad origami skills. Except when he tried to make a seashell, it just looked like crumpled paper. I sit up and rub my eyes. I can tell it's early because of the slant of the sunlight through the windows. I can't believe he's already awake, hunched over, writing something while quietly tapping his foot. It's like he's taking a final exam and doesn't want me copying off of his test.
Yo, what are you doing?
Journaling.
You journal a lot?
Pretty much every morning since 7th grade, Thomas says.
I'm almost done.
How'd you sleep? Are my sheets still dry?
Fuck you.
My back does hurt a bit, but not so much that I can't get used to it.
I left a new toothbrush and towel out for you in the bathroom if you want to wash up before breakfast.
His eyes are still on the page.
You're cooking breakfast?
Yeah, right. I only know how to make toast and Pop-Tarts. We'll figure something out.
Thomas smiles and returns to journaling.
I have to wait a second before I throw off the covers because of that thing that happens to guys when they first wake up. But he isn't even looking at me. I hurry out of his room and can only assume his mother's gone off to work already by the way he's freely letting me walk around the place. I find the bathroom and take a piss while looking around the shelves piled with clean and fluffy towels. At home, we share the same batch, raggedy and torn, washed at best twice a month. When I'm done brushing, I go back to Thomas's room, and he's already gone. I follow the sound of clattering utensils into the kitchen, stopping once to check out all the photos on the wall. There's Thomas as a kid playing baseball, the same crazy eyebrows. The kitchen is twice the size of mine. There are red pots and pans hanging from the wall, and they look so spotless. There's a mini TV on top of the fridge, and Thomas has the news playing like a grown man, but he's not listening because he's on the phone.
I can mail those back to you, he says, pouring corn bran into two bowls, handing me one.
No, Sarah. I think it's too soon to meet up. Look, I... He looks at the phone before setting it on the counter. She hung up. Everything okay?
She wants every letter and card she wrote to me.
I don't know. She's hoping I'll reread them or something, so I'll miss her. He sits down across from me and shrugs.
Anyway, enough with that. Sorry to report this was the only cereal we had left. I ate all the Lucky Charms the other night, but we have cookies and marshmallows, and a leftover chocolate bunny from Easter we can use. I hope that's cool.
The last time I sat down for a meal in a kitchen was at my grandparents' house, and they're both dead now. Still, I jump out of my seat and crumble Chips Ahoy into my cereal. And Thomas gives me the biggest smile. After breakfast, we head out, walking nowhere in particular. In fact, walking away from my block.
So who are your friends around here?
I ask him.
You, Thomas says, and I think Baby Freddy and Skinny Dave like me just fine.
I meant on your block.
I know you did.
It's embarrassing. My only friend here is Mr. Isaacs on the first floor. He's big on cats and obsessed with factories.
He shrugs. I had to outgrow my friends after they played me. I'm a little nervous asking, but I have to.
What did they do?
After what my father did on my birthday, I stopped wanting to celebrate it. But last year my friend Victor kept calling. He was going to throw a party, a night of board games and drinking. I was about to go to Victor's house, but then he called and canceled last minute to go to some concert with our friends. I thought it was part of some bigger surprise. My phone never rang after that. I was too depressed to drink alone, so I just sort of sat in my room and did nothing. They didn't even bring me back a t-shirt.
Without knowing Victor, I know he's an asshole.
You don't need dickheads like that in your life anyway.
They slow you down.
Thomas stops walking, turns me toward him, and says, "This is what I like about you, Stretch. You care about what happens to you. Everyone else seems resigned to grow up and become nobodies who are stuck here. They don't dream. They don't think about the future."
I have to look away because all this talk of the future shakes me.
I massage my scar.
"You're wrong," I say.
Maybe I should turn around and go home so I don't waste this time.
I thought death was a happy ending exit strategy.
"I appreciate everything you're saying, but..."
"But nothing."
Thomas grabs my wrist.
"We all make mistakes. Every wrong job I take is a mistake, but it's also a step in the right direction. If nothing else, it's a step away from the wrong one. You would never do that to yourself again, right?"
He's looking at me, forcing me to meet his eyes.
"Never."
Thomas lets go and keeps walking.
"And that alone makes you different."
We continue down the block in silence until a young woman with a picket sign walks past us in the other direction. "Leteo is here today, but needs to be gone tomorrow."
I chase after her, and Thomas follows.
Excuse me, sorry.
What's with the sign?"
"A girl has gone brain dead because of Leteo," the woman answers. Her voice is grave, and her eyes look vacant.
"She's the fourth this week. We're rallying to shut this place down."
The woman sounds proud, self-important. She's probably also one of those crazy PETA people who throw fake blood at elderly women in fur coats.
"We?"
The woman doesn't answer. Thomas and I exchange a glance. We follow her. The closer we get to 168th Street, the louder we hear a crowd hidden by buildings. There are cop cars blocking the street, their sirens failing to warn other people away. We round the corner, and the street is as crowded as a holiday parade, except instead of character balloons in the air, there are picket signs being raised. Chapter 10. An Unforgettable Rally. I've seen pictures of the Bronx District Leteo Institute before, but the unhappy rioters add an edge when seeing it up close. You'd think the Institute would look more futuristic, like the Apple Store in Manhattan, but honestly, the Museum of Natural History looks more cutting-edge than Leteo does. The building is 4 floors high, with bricks the color of ashes. Leteo is getting the bad rap of a good morgue with their body count. It's still strange to me how hospitals never incite this sort of reaction when they're guiltier of more cases of malpractice. Maybe it's because Leteo is supposed to only exist in old science fiction shows, and this advancement scares people. A bald guy fills us in on the recent botched surgery. Apparently, some schizophrenic girl in her early 20s was having a procedure done to wipe her mind clean of imaginary characters that have shadowed her since childhood. Instead, she never woke up at all. Near death, but not close enough. Representatives of the Institute haven't come forth with any additional information about the girl's coma. A curly-haired woman and an older man are trying to squeeze through the crowd, unsuccessfully. They both have signs. "No miracles for criminals. Grief is natural. Guilt is deserved." It doesn't match the brain-dead bit.
"You did a criminal a favor,"
the old man shouts over the crowd, as if someone from Leteo is listening to his complaints in person.
"What, you gonna save some terrorist next?"
"Excuse me, sir," Thomas says. What's with the signs?
It's the woman who answers us.
We're here to speak against the car accident, of course.
We don't know what you're talking about, I say. She nudges the man.
Harold, tell these boys about the wreck. You tell it better than I do.
You kids should get off your phones and watch the news, Harold says.
I turn to Thomas, who smirks.
A few months ago, some yahoo crashed his car and killed his 4-year-old son and wife. For some bizarre reason, the hellions at Lateo agree to wipe the memory of his wife's and son's existences after he tried to kill himself in jail.
Why would he want to forget his family? I ask.
Guilt,
Harold says.
Lateo says he's able to function better with prison tasks under the belief he killed strangers.
Maggie and I believe that is nonsense. That guilt is his to feel.
It's worse than a hit and run, truly, Maggie says. They view us all as clients, not patients. Big difference.
She turns her back on us and pumps her sign up as high as she can, screaming, No miracles for criminals! No miracles for criminals! Police charge through the crowd in an effort to reach the entrance. Thomas drags me back so we don't get caught up in any of it. I turn one last time, bumping shoulders with a couple people, and I see a child on a man's shoulders waving a sign that reads, No to tabula rasa. The kid definitely has no idea what it means, but if anyone snaps a photo, it's bound to go viral. On the other side of the crowd, there are Lateo supporters. Maybe only a fourth of the protesters, but they're here. They're probably friends or relatives of forgetters who appreciate how Lateo repairs lives. I half expect Kyle's parents to be there, though I can't possibly imagine what sort of sign they would have. Maybe, good job on making my son forget his twin. He always wanted to be an only child. No, if they were around here, they'd more likely be inside Lateo to forget Kenneth, too. I would, if I had to live with someone who had his face and his laugh. Thomas finally lets go of me when we get to the corner. But we stop and watch as a chant begins. Never forget! Never forget! I used to think the procedure was the shadiest scam in all of Scamville, I tell Thomas as we walk home, keeping my voice low as we pass the crowded bus stop, as if the entire country doesn't know about Lateo. New York hosts 3 institutes, one here in the Bronx, another in Long Island, and a third in Manhattan. I wonder if there are riots going down in front of the ones in Arizona or Texas, California or Florida. I know someone who went through it. I don't know him anymore. I mean, I know him, but he's different now, you know? Wait. What? Kyle, this kid I grew up with, his twin brother was killed and it was sort of his fault, so we forgot Kenneth ever existed so he could live. I hope he's doing okay and not having any weird delayed reactions, I say. You don't see him anymore? Nope. His family moved away before they got it done. I'm not even sure where they went. Baby Freddy's mom somehow found out about the procedure, and our entire block knew by the end of the day. It would have been impossible keeping everyone he's ever met from asking about his twin, so leaving made sense. Kyle and Kenneth, the Lake twins. We don't remember them nearly enough. In every generation on my block, a group of friends loses someone. One of the big kids, Benton, drunk rode his bike into traffic a couple years ago. I don't know the details beyond that, but I guess it could be said that Kenneth took one for the team. The least we could do is fucking remember him. Especially when Kyle can't. My heart is racing just thinking about it. The way it pounds when I'm the last one standing in a game of manhunt. Would you ever do it? The procedure? I have nothing to forget. And I wouldn't if I did, Thomas says. Everyone plays a purpose. Even fathers who lie to you or leave you behind. Time takes care of all that pain, so if someone derails you, it'll be okay eventually.
You?
When you put it that way, I have nothing I'd want erased either, I say. Well, maybe clowns. I could go without circus memories.
Doctors should work on erasing clowns. Period.
Chapter 11 Trade Hangout. I've been picking up extra shifts at Good Foods because Mom's not feeling well. She's missed work 2 days in a row already, and it's really going to set us back. Mohad even trusted me to close up last night, and all my friends naturally wanted to lock themselves in and have a party with every beer and cigarette and snack available to us. The last thing this family needs is me getting thrown in jail and sued. It's my first day off since witnessing the Lateo rally with Thomas, the last time I saw him. I'm meeting him in a bit, but until then I'm chilling with Brendan and baby Freddy on a staircase. On one of the steps, Brendan is rolling up some weed on top of graph paper and overdue bills. I thought your clients do all that themselves.
These aren't for my clients, Brendan says, licking the tip of his freshly rolled and folded blunt. I'm branching out. I'll work some corners and colleges, and if I roll it myself, they won't realize I'm skimming them 20% of what they're paying for.
My boss is looking for another dishwasher, baby Freddy says, if you want to stop dealing.
Washing dishes is for spicks like you and Skinny Dave.
I'm good.
Whatever. Did I get a freebie?
You can have half off.
Brendan's smart. I've seen baby Freddy trying to smoke, and it would be a waste of the weed he's saving from shorting others.
Kenneth liked to smoke, I say. Brendan looks up.
Fucking shame Kenneth's brother fucked the wrong guy's sister. A guy with a gun.
Baby Freddy ignores him. He loved acting like he was Kyle, even though Kyle hated that.
Maybe that's the real reason Kyle forgot about Kenneth, Brendan says, lighting up the blunt he just rolled and inhaling deeply.
Great, now you got me smoking someone else's shit.
He tosses all his blunts into a Ziploc bag and sprinkles the remaining weed in.
Let's go get a game going. I feel like running.
I'm about to link up with Thomas, actually. I'm down when I get back, though.
Okay, then, Brendan says.
We all leave the staircase, and a security guard sees us with Brendan's Ziploc bag. He calls us delinquents, but carries on. Baby Freddy tells me he'll see me later. Brendan keeps it moving.
I definitely should have left the memories of Kenneth and Kyle dead and buried.
What should we do?
I have this thing I do with Genevieve.
If you're thinking what I think you're thinking, that's off the list, Thomas says, patting my back.
Hilarious.
No, this isn't going to sound great either. But we have trade dates.
Is that where you hang out with another couple and swap girlfriends or something?
No, God, why doesn't anyone get this?
I hate repeating myself almost more than anything in the entire universe, but I tell them what a trade date is in the hopes we can do something fun like it, but in a no-homo way.
I was thinking we could go maybe do a reverse trade date, without calling it a reverse trade date, or a date at all. Will you take me somewhere personal for you, and I'll do the same.
Sounds cool. We'll skip the rooftop since you've already been there.
Let me think about it. You go first.
We go to Comic Book Asylum. I tried applying for a job before, but they told me I have to wait until I'm done with school because of some bullshit like labor laws or something. I don't remember. I can't think of a cooler atmosphere to work.
This is the best fucking place ever, I say as we arrive. I mean,
look at this fucking door. Isn't this the best fucking door you've ever seen?
It is the best fucking door I've ever seen, Thomas says.
You curse a lot.
Yeah, my mom used to get really pissed whenever the bus driver told her I was cursing on the school bus with Brendan, but once a year she would host late-night spelling bees for me and my brother, only using curses. I think it was her way of letting us get it out of our systems.
Thomas laughs.
Your mom is F-U-C-K-I-N-G awesome.
He goes straight over to the cape closet and tries on both Superman and Batman capes, quoting lines from each movie.
Krypton had its chance, and
swear to me.
He follows me over to the bargain cart, picks up a comic, and says,
I hate how superheroes can be 20 for 30 years so comic book artists never have to create new characters. It's lazy.
Some hardcore comic geeks turn around and glare at him. I'm a little concerned for his life.
I don't know. At least those cash cows finish their comics.
My comic?
You have a comic?
Not one for sale.
Where is it?
Not here. Can I read it?
It's not done. So what?
It's not good. So what?
Stretch, I let you use my rooftop for your girl's birthday. You owe me.
I thought I was going to help you figure out who you are.
Just let me read your comic.
Fine.
Soon.
I think about the page where I left off in the comic, with Sun Warden torn between saving his girlfriend or best friend from becoming dragon food. If someone asked me to choose between saving Genevieve or Thomas, I would rather dive headfirst into the mouth of the dragon. I'm about to tell him how I haven't drawn a whole lot since my dad's death, but I look up and see Colin from school, and he sees me too. I feel a little shitty. I wasn't 100% supportive or sympathetic toward him when he told me he got Nicole pregnant. But, well, sex is basic math. Condom equals less chance of having a baby, and no condom usually equals baby. And I shouldn't have to feel like a dick because he didn't think to properly wrap his up. Even though I'm a firm believer that everyone in the universe will one day cut the bullshit, as in politely nod at one another instead of wasting their short lives with pointless conversations, I feel obligated to say something. I walk up to Colin. He smells of a cheap drugstore brand cologne.
Hey, how's your summer been? We miss you around the courtyard, dude.
It's a bit of a lie, since he always thought Manhunt was child's play. He's not wrong, but he never fully beasted at it like we do. He preferred sports, mainly basketball. Colin's eyes are red. Not stone, but very similar to how I look whenever I'm beyond exhausted and frustrated, or bottling in an insane amount of anger. I can't blame him, since I hear he's working two jobs to pay for a baby he likely didn't want and definitely isn't ready for. The last thing I should have done is reminded him how much fun he's missing out on. He's holding issue number 6 of The Dark Alternates, that series I never got into. I get my magic fix from Scorpius Hawthorne. He doesn't say anything, so I ask, "How you liking that series?"
"Please, leave me alone,"
Colin says without looking at me.
"Seriously, back off."
Before I can apologize, he flings the comic onto the floor and run walks out. I turn around. Thomas is wearing the Superman cape again.
"Did you see that?"
"Nope. Don't tell me I missed someone shooting webs out of their hands." "No, and Spider-Man fires webs from his wrists, not his hands," I correct. It's a very crucial distinction. I used to go to school with this asshole, and he just blew me off.
What's the story?
He had sex without a condom and is now expecting a kid. The end.
He's probably stressed.
Thomas browses for a little bit longer, knocks on the fireplace.
Pretty cool place you picked.
Thanks.
I'm ready to bounce whenever you pick a place.
I decided. I hope you're game for a run, he says while walking toward the door.
Thomas?
Yeah?
Can the store maybe have its cape back?
We're at his high school's track field. The gate is wide open, and apparently it's available to the public all summer. There are 6 people running the track right now. 2 are listening to music, and the others are forced to hear the 2 and 5 trains as they speed past. Because it's a high school field, it doubles for other sports, like soccer and football. There's a nice breeze here, and it's exactly the kind of place to come to when life is suffocating.
Are you on the track team?
I tried out, but wasn't fast enough, Thomas says.
But I bet I'm faster than you.
Yeah, right. I've seen you run during Manhunt. There's a difference between racing and being chased.
Not for me. I'm always ahead.
Loser has to buy winner ice cream. We make up our own start and finish lines, and crouch like we're pros.
I'm thinking pistachio, I say, FYI.
Three, two, one, go! Thomas takes the lead, putting all his speed into these first few seconds, whereas I know to be fast, but to also pace myself. After about 10 seconds, he's already winding down. He may be a month or two away from a six-pack, but I've been running relay races with Brendan since the better part of my childhood. My feet pound against the pressurized rubber, and the sneakers are way too tight on me, but I run, run, run until I pass him, and I don't stop until I leap over the discarded water bottle we marked as the finish line. Thomas doesn't even finish. He just collapses onto the grass. I jump up and down until my ribcage hurts.
I dusted you!
You cheated, Thomas pants, catching his breath.
You have a height advantage. Longer legs.
Wow! That's going into the bullshit Hall of Fame! I fall face first next to him, and the grass stains the knees of my jeans.
Maybe don't choose a place next time where you'll get your ass handed to you.
Why here, anyway? I'm used to quitting things.
Really?
I punch him in the shoulder. He punches me back.
Yeah, really.
But this place rejected me from becoming someone. And that was a first. Way to make me feel guilty for proving how slow you are.
Not at all!
It's not like my heart is in running or anything like that, but at least I learned that you can't always choose who you're going to be. Sometimes you're fast enough to run track, sometimes you're not.
He tucks his hands behind his head, still catching his breath.
Anyway, it's a pretty chill place to just remember and think, you know?
I do now.
We don't go and get ice cream. We wait for our rib cages to stop killing us, counting overhead trains go by. And then we race up and down the bleachers before flopping onto the grass again. When I get back to the block, my friends are sitting on a brown picnic table, their bikes surrounding them. When we were younger, we would play shark here. The game starts with one person, the shark, trying to drag you off the table, the raft, by your ankles. Once you're off, you become a shark too. Sometimes, when there were too many sharks, some players would hop on their bikes and just circle the survivors in a menacing way.
Hey, you guys game for manhunt?
I'm pretty drained from running around before, but if I can find a decent hiding spot, it won't matter.
I think we're going to ride bikes instead,
Nolan says.
We played manhunt already, Dion says.
And smoke, too,
Skinny Dave says, laughing.
I'll go upstairs and get my rollerblades,
I say. And I turn to run upstairs when Nolan stops me.
Bikes only, dude.
I look over at Brendan. I don't know why I expected him to defend me, but that was stupid. He's obviously still pissed I brought up Kenneth and Kyle. He obviously told the guys.
It's cool. I'll go home and read Scorpius Hawthorne, or...
They don't wait for me to finish. They mount their bikes and pedal away from me. Chapter 12 Fights and Fireworks. Yes, it took Brendan 3 whole days to get over his little bitch fit. If he had waited one more day, it would have been his longest grudge since we were 14, when he got mad at me for not choosing him as my partner for a gaming tournament on 3rd Avenue. Basically, Brendan thinks that if you're not with him, you're against him. It's ridiculous, but whatever. I'm just glad he grew up just in time so I could rush out of Yolanda's pizzeria with him and the other guys. Me crazy is fighting some 20-something in the middle of the street. I was 9 when I got into my first fight with someone who wasn't my brother. I didn't know how to make a fist, so Brendan had to help me. Every time the kid, Larry, would hit me, I would run back to Brendan to ball my fists for me until I couldn't take it any longer. Yeah, I lost my first fight over a plastic whistle to a kid named Larry. But learning how to make a fist helped me later in a fight against Nolan. We were all wrestling and he slammed me too hard against the mat. I got pissed and clocked his jaw. I lost again, but I got a couple good swings in before Brendan broke it up. No one is breaking up Me Crazy's fight. And, well, dumb son of a bitch, ask for it. That's what I'm calling him, because you would have to be a dumb son of a bitch to pick a fight with Me Crazy. It's true. Me crazy bumped into the guy at the pizzeria and didn't apologize. But dumb son of a bitch shouldn't have called him a homeless waste of life just because me crazy has bad acne, yellow teeth, and smells like he hasn't showered in over a week. To be fair, there's no way dumb son of a bitch could have known the word homeless as me crazy's only soft spot since he and his family have been evicted twice. But let this be a lesson to all, never to fuck with someone who looks like they may not have a future outside prison. So, me crazy hit dumb son of a bitch in the face with his own food tray and dragged him outside at the owner's request. Dumb son of a bitch's nose is bleeding. Not because of the tray, no. That's because me crazy slammed the poor guy's face into a buy three slices, get one free drink sign.
Someone should break this up, Thomas says, with an urgency I've never heard from any of my friends.
He had it coming, Skinny Dave says.
He's bouncing around like he has to piss, and I would know because he has a habit of holding it in so he can just have one great piss later in a staircase of his choosing. Strange kid.
No one deserves that,
Thomas says after me crazy punches dumb son of a bitch in his balls repeatedly.
I mean, he's right.
Cars are at a stop now and honking their horns. Some drivers get out to yell at me crazy, others to watch the fight. Luckily for this guy, we're close to a hospital because, shit, I'm positive there's no way he's ever had his ass handed to him like he has today. Me crazy tackles him against a parked car, and before he can smash dumb son of a bitch's head into the window, we hear police sirens.
Go! Go! Run, fuckers!
Even if we never touched dumb son of a bitch, we also never try to stop the fight. There's no way in hell the cops will find me crazy once he goes into hiding, and none of us want to find ourselves in the situation where we're forced to either go to jail or rat out me crazy's identity, so we run. Thomas follows me, and he runs way faster than he did during our race 3 days ago, and I lead him down into the garage where we camp out behind a silver Mazda. Thomas asks,
"You do this a lot?"
"Not really."
It's clear he looks down on us all fighting, so I avoid telling him how we sometimes run into other projects so the cops will look for the suspect, usually me crazy, there instead of our block.
"How many fights have you been in?"
"Just one,"
Thomas says.
"How is that possible? Even baby Freddy has been in more than one fight, and he's a total pussy."
"I don't go around picking fights."
"I don't either, but I have to fight back if someone comes at me, right?"
I've been exposed to fighting my entire life, and I never really stopped to think that there were alternatives to being laid out. But I like this idea that Thomas grew up never needing anyone to teach him how to make a fist, and I can't help but feel like we're all doing something wrong for always turning to ours.
"Yeah, I definitely don't want to see you beaten to death, but it was kind of a bummer seeing you not care all that much when someone else was getting roughed up," Thomas says.
"And it's a blow that makes me feel like someone who throws away entire sandwiches in front of a homeless family. But it also makes me feel like someone has my back enough to speak up no matter how I might react."
"I guess being scared of me crazy isn't much of an excuse, huh?"
"It's a hell of an excuse."
No more looking at my fight record like war wounds to be proud of.
Seriously, who am I? Some supervillain who thrives on destruction like Hitler or Megatron? I can reach my happy ending without all hell breaking loose.
"Should we go make sure an ambulance has come to help him out already?"
Thomas stands up and extends a hand to me, just like in the sprinklers last week. I'm nervous of what we'll find when we leave the garage. Dumb son of a bitch is okay as far as we know. There's no doubt some of our neighbors witnessed the fight too, probably even cheered it on from their windows. But if they were questioned about me crazy's identity, they probably lied to protect themselves. Psychopath or not, he is our own, and we're stuck to him like a conjoined twin who may kill someone in front of us one day. Hell, he might even kill us. But that was 2 days ago. Now it's 4th of July, so we're focused on a day of fireworks instead. Brendan dropped $5 on white popper rocks and carefully poured them all into an old popcorn bucket. Then he went up to the balcony, and I hung back down by the picnic table so I could give the signal on when to drop them. We tried pulling this prank off last year, but Brendan dropped them all like a limp dick, and neither of us had enough money to fill up another. Baby Freddy comes out of Good Foods. I kick the wall with my hands in my pockets. Brendan turns over the bucket, and all the Papa Rocks fall to the ground. The blast of tiny sparks and deafening pops scares the shit out of Baby Freddy. I give Brendan an air high five, then a real one when we all join up again.
One day, I'm going to be famous and rich and will never come back to check on you fuckers, Baby Freddy says.
He's only a year younger than the rest of us, but we do bully him like he's our little brother. Doubtful if that name keeps following you around for the rest of your life, I say.
I bet you all anything. I have faith.
Faith is just arrogance disguised by God, Skinny Dave says. It's exactly the kind of thing you expect to hear from a pothead. Me Crazy pulls out a few fireworks from his pockets, which, you know, we can all agree is insanely dangerous, and he taunts Baby Freddy with them. Let me see those, I tell Me Crazy, cutting in front of Baby Freddy. I made a promise to myself that I wouldn't just stand by anymore when someone's life was being threatened. I don't want to know what Me Crazy had to do to convince someone to sell him fireworks. Baby Freddy asks, Do you think we can use Thomas's roof to set these off? Our fireworks will be higher than everyone else's. I invited them all to Thomas's rooftop party on the 9th. Although if they don't come, it's not much of a party at all, because Thomas doesn't seem to have any real friends outside of us. Without them, it would just be him, Genevieve, and me. His neighbors would be up on the roof, too, I say. I think all roofs are out since Skinny Dave, higher than a pothead on the moon, almost sent a firework blasting straight into someone's window last year. We decide ground level is best and set up. Fat Dave stole his mother's cooking lighter. He ignites the first firework while we're all still dangerously close to it. Luckily, it soars and explodes in bursts of yellow somewhere above the 27th floor of Skinny Dave's building. We chill back, eating honey buns and drinking Arizona teas, while Fat Dave sends more of his fireworks zooming and whistling and exploding into the air. Thomas finally joins us. He doesn't say a word, just grabs a honey bun and watches the show. I haven't seen him since yesterday morning when I left his house. There was zero sleeping during that sleepover, and my body's clock is thrown off now. But it was worth it to be able to play hangman on the wall over his bed, to act like we were spies while we tiptoed from his room to the kitchen so we could warm up Hot Pockets without bothering his mother. Fat Dave offers me the lighter. I really wish Genevieve were here to hold my hand right now. There are four fireworks left, and I choose the small orange one because the other three look like explosives and shit. That would suck if they were. I ignite the wick, and the firework takes flight. In that moment, I wish my existence were as simple as being set on fire and exploding in the sky. Chapter 13 Heartless. I've been keeping Thomas company during his big job hunt Saturday. Things haven't really been going in his favor. His mom told him about an assistant job at this barbershop on Melrose, and even though he didn't really want to sweep up curls while barbers told crude stories about the women they've slept with, he was still bummed when the position had been filled. Worse, it was some smug kid who proudly rinsed a razor as Thomas was being turned away. Afterward, we went to a flower shop. Thomas thought it could be a nice, meditative place to work, but the florist worried about Thomas's flighty resume, as did the baker, the fruit stand guy, the art studio owner, and lastly, and perhaps most insulting, the 20-year-old who didn't think Thomas could bring any depth to his startup business. I mean, anyone who thinks you need depth to wrap presents for a pet's birthday is a fucking depthless idiot. Fuck it all, Stretch, Thomas says now. He throws his remaining resumes in the trash, spitting on them all, which hardly seems called for. But I'm going to let him have his moment. You didn't actually want any of those jobs, I say. Yeah, but what if something amazing opened up for me by trying out something I would never go for? There are plenty other jobs to apply to. I wish Mohad were hiring at Good Foods. Maybe I can be a pool boy. Or a lifeguard, I say. Or a swimming coach.
I'll be your first student.
You don't know how to swim?
Nope. Never really had to know how to, though it would have been nice considering how I almost drowned last summer.